tomorrow.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Welcome back to Shaky Understanding. We're concluding our Henry VI trilogy today. Today is Return of the King.
Ooh, except not really. Stay tuned for the summary. Here's some Shakespeare abridged. So we start off part three with the Duke of York in the throne room with his sons and all his followers, and they're kind of going, hey, where is King Henry? We've just pursued him to London because we want to defeat him in battle, and now we don't know where he is. Warwick urges York to just sit on the throne. The king's not here, sit down and take it. So York does, and then Henry enters the throne room with all of his followers, and they want to just fight York right there. They say, let's go for it, let's have a battle right now. Henry, however, says, all right, let's calm down, and I'll just nicely ask York to get off my throne. And York then makes public his claim to the throne. And Henry says, you know, I do have a right to the crown, but Henry asks York to let him rule while he's still alive, while King Henry's still alive. But when he dies, he'll pass on the throne to the House of York, because he's a nice guy like that, and he doesn't want to fight. So York agrees and says, okay, when you die, either I'll be king or my sons will be king. Good to go. And he leaves. Henry's nobles are a little bit like, what the F, dude? Why would you do that? Your son is now not going to become king. And Margaret, Queen Margaret, arrives and says, you are the worst father in the world. You've disinherited your son from being King of England, and I hate you, and that was such a poor choice. You disgust me. Now, back in the town of York, Richard's sons, Edward and Richard, and one of his followers, Montague, talk to York, and they say, listen, you should just take the throne right now. He's already said he'll give it to you. Don't wait till he dies. Just go for it. But York says, no, I made a promise. I swore an oath. I'm going to wait until he dies. However, Richard easily convinces him. Richard III, who we have already met, says, you know, the oath wasn't really that binding. Your promise, you know, we can let that slide. Then Queen Margaret arrives with her own army to battle with York. In another area of the country, Richard's other son, Rutland, is captured and killed on the way home by Clifford, who wants to avenge his father's death at York's hands. York's troops are losing the battle with Margaret, and York is then captured by Margaret and Clifford. She offers York a handkerchief dipped in his son's blood and says, wipe your tears with this bloody handkerchief from your son. And he is really upset, as you would be. And says, you are an unnatural woman, and you are horrible. And then Clifford and Margaret stab him to death to shut him up. Thus ends Duke of York. Then Edward and Richard, again, this is Richard III, not Richard who just died, are going, hey, what happened to our dad? He was in this battle, but then we lost sight of him. And then they see a vision of three suns on the horizon, which Edward believes is a sign that the three York brothers must become as one. Richard is kind of skeptical of that, and he says, you know who I trust? Myself. Not even my brothers. Then a messenger arrives and tells Edward and Richard that their father is dead, and they are devastated. Warwick and Montague prepare to march to spar again with Margaret's forces and go try and beat her in battle. And this time, they're going to also bring along York's other son, George, and his troops. So they're getting everybody together to make an epic battle. Margaret and Clifford, with their followers, meet Henry at the town of York. And Clifford says to Henry, hey, I really think that you should go back on your word and not disinherit your son. This is a really poor decision. You are king. Your son is prince. He should be king. But Henry isn't convinced that sons automatically should just become king, because sons might not appreciate what their fathers left them and all the hard work that went into it, and maybe you need to earn being king. Because Henry VI, didn't really enjoy Henry V's legacy. Then Edward and his men burst in and demand the throne, and the nobles from each side, the Lancasters and the Yorks, start just spewing insults at each other. Henry tries to break into this cacophony of arguments, but no one listens to him. Edward blames Margaret's pride for the Civil War, and he declares that they will have to argue on the battlefield because Henry can't get a word in edgewise, so they decide to solve this problem via violence. Richard hunts Clifford on the field of battle because he wants to have revenge for his brother's death and his father's death, and the battle goes on, and Henry just watches from far away because battles go much better when Henry is not nearby. He sees two soldiers drag dead bodies away from the scene of fighting, trying to find valuables on them to steal or take some of their armor. And as the soldiers remove the clothing from these dead bodies that they're dragging, they realize one discovers he's accidentally killed his own father, and the other one realizes that he's accidentally killed his own son. So it's absolute utter chaos on the battlefield, and Henry just is so devastated and so upset, and he mourns that the battles of the nation are having people kill within families. So Henry says to Prince Edward, this being Prince Edward, not Edward York, but Henry's son, Prince Edward, to run away. Clifford is wounded in the battle and dies. Edward of York sees he's won the battle, but King Henry's nowhere to be found, so they head back to London to crown Edward as king and to give new titles to Richard and George. Henry is wandering through the forest where he is arrested by two men who support King Edward. Edward sends Warwick to France to ask for the hand of the King of France's sister so that they can have a nice political marriage and smooth things over with France. Margaret then goes to France to ask for aid against Edward. In London, we have this lovely woman appear named Lady Grey, and she goes to now King Edward and says, hey, give me my land back. This is not cool. He really likes this lady and says, you're pretty cool standing up to me in the throne room. Let's get married. And she goes, I'm really not into that plan. And he goes, no, I think it's a great idea. We should definitely get married. So they get married. His brothers are really annoyed that he is marrying this Lady Grey and not going to marry someone from France for this political alliance. He's made a bad choice in marriage, and we all know what happens when you marry the wrong person. Don't do it.
Rob Stark.
So Richard alone considers that he might be able to become king one day, and he's much, much closer to the throne. There are some obstacles. You know, he might need to commit a few murders, but, you know, what alternative does he have? He would be really happy in court because he has some issues. He's got a crooked back and a withered arm, and so nobody really likes him because he's ugly. So he decides, there's really nothing for me to do except take over the country. So he has a whole soliloquy, a whole monologue about this, and he says, I'm going to just be really good and really nice to everyone and get everyone to trust me, and then I'm going to make my move, which is pretty smart. Over in France, Warwick and Margaret arrive at the same time, and King Louis decides to give the hand of his sister Lady Bonna to Edward, thus saying to Margaret, essentially, screw you. I'm going to trust this new king of England. I'm not going to try and fight and get him off the throne. Let's just have this marriage and we'll all be happy. However, then a messenger arrives with the news that Edward is already married. So this totally embarrasses the king of France. And Warwick, who's been sent there and now looks like a total fool and like he was playing the king for a fool. So he decides to change sides, and his allegiance is now with King Henry and against King Edward. So King Louis gives Margaret's troops to fight with Edward and get him off the throne because, just really bad manners. Don't send someone to try and arrange a marriage when you're already married. Ouch. Back in England, Edward and his brothers and his lords and his whole council discuss his marriage. And then they receive news that Warwick and Margaret have joined forces, and George is so upset by Edward's new marriage that he leaves with Somerset to join with Warwick. This is how important marriage was in those days. as a statement of political and economic stability. You don't mess with it. In preparation for these coming battles, Edward is captured. Seeing George on the enemy side, Edward gives up the throne and says, you know what, I would rather just be in prison at Warwick's brother's estate than have to fight against my own family. I'm sorry, my bad, I'll stop. Yet Richard and Hastings say, oh no, it's cool, let's get you out of prison. So they spring him from this estate and help him escape. Then Warwick, George, and their nobles, who again, that's on King Henry's side, find Henry in the tower and free him. And Henry says he just wants to be king in name only. He says Warwick and George are going to be the joint protectors of the kingdom, and he wants nothing to do with it. Essentially, you guys be prime minister, I'm going to be king over here.
Or like what King Lear does.
Yeah, just... I'm going to just drink my wine and chill, and you guys run the country for me.
Read books.
Right. Then they receive word that Edward has escaped to Brittany, which is in France. So he's back across the English Channel, where he decides he's working to get some reinforcements and return with that. So he returns to the town of York. Edward thinks, you know, I've got my people. I could... start another war, start another battle, but maybe I'll just be content and just be Duke of York. But his followers go, no, you should really be king. You should seek the throne. Don't just sit around being Duke. What good is that? Henry's followers then go to gather troops to battle Edward, and Edward and Richard capture Henry and send him to the tower before they march to meet Warwick's army. So Henry's locked up again. Whoops. These are reasons battles go better when Henry's not there. Edward's army then meet Warwick's forces. So we have the Yorks fighting against the Lancasters. And Edward asks Warwick if he will again swear allegiance to him and come back to his side. And Warwick refuses because he's been totally embarrassed by Edward. And he does not like him anymore and does not trust him anymore. And he's not going to fight on his side. Then Warwick's supporters arrive, including George, Edward's brother. And Richard convinces George to break with Warwick, and then the forces prepare to fight. So there's a lot of switching sides, and then a giant battle ensues. Warwick is wounded and dies, and his surviving supporters, Somerset and Oxford, go to join Margaret's army. Like there aren't enough armies already floating around England. Margaret takes her forces and meets with Edward's army. Edward wins that battle, but he sends Somerset and Oxford away, kills Prince Edward, Henry's son, and Margaret's son, Edward, and imprisons Margaret. And then Richard sneaks off to the tower where Henry is waiting. Henry then prophesizes that thousands will suffer because of Richard's deeds. Richard, who's now Duke of Gloucester, but we will come to know him as Richard III, because he was born under all these evil signs. Richard kills Henry and declares himself separated from family, brotherhood. He is only out for himself since he was punished by the heavens and has this horrible deformed body. He only is going to care about himself because nobody else cares about him. And now with King Henry and Prince Edward killed and out of the way, Richard now has to focus on eliminating his two brothers, George and Edward. Edward has a son who's been born, and George and Richard kiss the child, and Edward has a big festival to celebrate that he has the throne. Because there's no one left to oppose him, except his own brother.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. So, like, there's a lot happening.
There's a lot.
Whew.
And we have a special guest today.
We do.
We have Richard, Duke of Gloucester.
Welcome, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you for having me in your lovely, lovely abode.
You are quite welcome.
There's so much that happens.
Oh my god, there's so much. I forgot about the scene where the dad drags across the body of his son and the son drags across the body of his father.
Oh, me too.
It's so dark and also great, but just terrible.
Yeah, so there's like one moment in the middle of the battle and it's just like non-named characters and one of them is like, oh, I can't, I finally got you, you're dead. And he looks at it and it's his son. And on the other side of the stage, the same thing happens. It's the son. He's looking at the body he just killed, and it's his father. And it's just to illustrate how civil this war was. It was just England against England, and everyone was infighting, and people were picking their sides, but it was brother against brother.
Yeah.
Brother fights brother, son kills father, father kills son, someone forgets their own name and confuses themselves for someone Edwards, Richards. A battle is a very, very messy thing if you are unaccustomed to it.
Are you accustomed to battles?
Yes. Yes, I am. I have seen blood in my days, and I expect to see much more before my time is done.
Ooh.
You know, sometimes you have to make something for yourself by shedding blood. Especially when people look at you as a toad in the streets. Mm-hmm. They look at your arms and your hands and they say, who is this creepy little crat just sitting in the alley? These are things that sometimes people say to you. And England is a very horrible place. Yeah.
It sounds terrible. I'm sorry.
Even if your family is of well standing, it's not.
And you were quite a decorated general. Like, you were very successful in the field, despite your deformity.
Trust me, I've been telling people that for a while. It only gets you so much.
I was gonna say, everybody turns on you when you marry the wrong person.
Jeez, for real though.
Boy.
Well, it wasn't even that. Like, it was more. It wasn't even just that he married the wrong person, it's that he was like, yes, I agree to that. Go to France for me. Thank you so much, Warwick. And then an hour later, he's like, dang, girl, what you doing today?
You won't get married?
It's like, bro, like, have some decency. Send a pigeon or something.
Send a raven. Just be like, yo, heads up.
Yeah, funny story, ravens less reliable than you'd hope. I mean, it's not like they know where they're going. They're just birds.
Just to talk a little bit about the marriage to Lady Grey, I want to bring up this little Easter egg that I think I found. So King Edward says to Clarence, basically, you think it'll be weird if I marry Lady Grey? And Gloucester, actually, you said that would be 10 days wonder at least. Now, fun fact, Lady Jane Grey, not this Lady Grey, but one of her direct descendants, a couple hundred years later, was actually Queen of England for either 9 days or 14 days disputed in the Tower. So I am pretty sure Shakespeare's having a clever little nod because people in the audience would have gotten that because Lady Jane Grey was queen right before Queen Elizabeth became queen. So that would have been a very recent happening.
Yeah.
And so just when he said, oh, Lady Grey, that would be 10 days wonder, I said, I see what you did. I understood that reference. There are some really great quotes in here. A woman's general? What should we fear? Oh, the answer is everything. Because Queen Margaret is a boss-ass lady.
Yeah, you guys, y'all kind of underestimated that Queen Margaret would be such a good general, but she ends up taking some huge battles.
Yes, no, she served the purpose that she needed to. Mm-hmm. You know, she thinned the herd, as you might say.
Ooh, very interesting.
I guess when you're on no one's side, every battle is a victory.
Yes.
Do you think that you should have become king instead of Edward when everyone wanted him to take the crown? Did you wish they just wanted to hand it to you instead?
That will right itself at some point, I am sure. The story is, the quadrology is done for now, but let's just say stay tuned for the sequel.
Because the next one in the historical order is... This is actually the first series of history Shakespeare wrote. He wrote the Henry VI series first. And then he went back and did Richard II and Henry IV and V. But after this one is Richard III. And what's so interesting is getting to see all this backstory to it, because I had never read this before. In this, you see Clarence, whose first name is George, switch sides a couple times against his brother in the fight. And the whole first part of Richard III's plot is that Richard III is spreading... Ooh, this is a little future casting for you right now. Sorry. This is a great idea, though, if you want to try it out.
Spoiler alert.
Starts spreading rumors that Clarence is against Edward, his brother, as the king. And that's what gets Clarence jailed in the beginning and ends up making him vulnerable to get murdered by some murderers that Richard hires. So it's sort of interesting to see that, because in Richard III, Clarence is just really nice. But in this one, he, like, betrayed his brother for real. So it makes sense that Edward would be suspicious.
I would say that if you were to just read part of your story, Richard, you'd come across as a bit sociopathic and a bit overly ambitious. But if you read particularly this play and the other Henry VI's as well, your claim is pretty legitimate, and you have a very firm reason to be going for the throne. It's not just pure ambition. You actually potentially should have inherited the throne, based on what King Henry says and did in this play.
I'm glad you said that. I'm very glad somebody would recognize it, because this throne was always meant to be mine. And it would have been mine. And it will be mine one day again.
That was
Do you agree?
Well,
I need some kind of support here.
I
think you agree.
General.
I think I would agree. If you're a great general at this time of history, and there are arguments that are being made already now that over here on our side of the ether, we found your remains, and there are arguments being made that you actually did a lot of good for the country while you were the ruler, and it's the artists and playwrights who came after that have made you a little more of a demon than perhaps you were.
Yes, as you see, back in my day, it was fine to mock people with disabilities, but it seems that in modern America, it is similarly accepted to do such. But people looked at me, children shriek in the streets, and women faint as I pass them by, but it does not delegitimize that I care for England and myself.
Someone says, give up the ghost. Is that original Shakespeare?
I think so, yeah. You said it.
Yes.
So you're talking about killing Warwick's brother.
Thy brother's blood the thirsty earth hath drunk, broached with the steely point of Clifford's lance. And in the very pangs of death he cried, like a dismal clangor heard from far, Warwick, revenge! Brother, revenge my death! So underneath the belly of their steeds that stained their fetlocks in his smoking blood, the noble gentleman gave up the ghost. End scene. Thank you.
Yay.
I am clever. I am. Never let it not be said that I do not have the gift of wit. The wit of the tongue. Yeah.
There's some lovely expositional dialogue in the play as well. Such as when Henry says, listen to this though. Henry says, now my Lord Hastings and Sir William Stanley, leave off to wonder why I draw you hither into this cheapest, thickest part of the park. So he's basically saying, hey guys, do you want to know why I brought you over here into this deep dark section of the forest? Let me tell you my plan. There's so many other instances throughout the play where it's just, and I am now walking down the battlefield.
Yeah. Well, this is his first history. So he was probably trying to navigate how to do that. I mean, maybe he wrote some other ones that were unsuccessful, but this is the first one that we have.
Right. There is some Richmond foreshadowing who comes to
this. Richmond is the guy who ends up coming to fight Richard III. Sorry, again, spoiler for your future.
It's good to know.
He's going to come challenge you for the throne because he's of Lancaster birth, is that right? I think he's like vaguely related, and then he ends up making a marriage for political reasons.
And smart he man. Marries the right person.
Marries the right person and ends up kind of kicking butt.
What?
Nothing. You'll find out later. I contend that Margaret drove this plot. Like, in the sense that we had come to an agreement at the beginning of this. And mind you, Richard and Edward also say, hey dad, like, why are we even letting this dopey king remain king for a while? But still, it's really Margaret that's like, you're gonna disinherit our son. Peace out. I'm bringing the armies. You stay here.
Because I do better in battle when you're not around.
Which is a thing she tells
Which
her husband,
is my most favorite thing, I think, in this whole play.
That's fair.
So King Henry, at the end, when he's talking with you, Richard, he makes some prophecies. Do kings make prophecies? Is this a thing? Or this is just part of the plot?
Oh, yeah. There's kings speak a lot, and sometimes what they say comes to pass, and sometimes you can kind of twist logic to decide that it was accurate. Sometimes I speak in prophecies, sometimes prophecies are spake of me. So to answer your question, sometimes.
I can't recall another king prophesying unless they were on the edge of death. Or crazy, because I feel like King Lear says some stuff when he's out in the, like, you know, wind.
Here's actually what I would say. I have enjoyed these histories more than I have enjoyed a lot of the other Shakespeare that we've read.
That's awesome.
And I don't know if it's because I am becoming more used to the language and more used to the style, and it's easier for me to read and process and understand what's happening. Or there's less subplots. Yes, there's a lot of political intrigue, but it's generally easy to follow and go, okay, well, they're on their side, so they're making a play to play against this person.
And there are stakes. There are stakes. And it reminds you that history is not written with a soft pen. It is written with the blood of the sword. And that cases of mistaken identity in romance are but pale in the face of warring nations.
Speaking of war, I am going to talk about a particular battle that is depicted in this play, and that is the Battle of Towton, which happened on Palm Sunday, March 29, 1461. At the time of the battle, Edward is on the throne in London. Margaret is up north, Queen Margaret, and both of the sides, the Yorks and the Lancasters, are desperate to gather large armies. So they're sending out summons to different gentlemen that they thought might be loyal, saying, bring us men, bring us horses, bring us people. We are going to have a crazy battle. Now, at this time in the late 1400s, equipping for war was not fast. Because armor and weaponry, it ranged from being either, you know, very expensive plates of armor, what we think of when we think of a knight, or it could just be some clubs and some blades and your old pitchfork. Weapons at this time were generally long and heavy or sharp, sometimes all of them at once, so you would either have a giant club that might just knock someone upside the head, or you could have a long, heavy broadsword. There was a weapon at this time called the pole axe, or bill. It was like a 6-foot-long wooden shaft that was topped with a curved blade on one side, and then the other side of it is a claw-like point and a thin spike at the top. So you could just, like, buffy it up in there with that.
Right.
Because when you swung it hard enough, it could crush armor and break flesh and bones underneath heavy plate armor. And because armor is so heavy, the weight of that could actually make it worse for the person wearing it, because once you're knocked down, it's very difficult to get back up if you're wearing 80 pounds of armor. And then the thick blade could then just, you know, chop off an arm, chop off a leg, chop off a head while you're lying there in agony. So, battle's not the friendliest at this time. So throughout March, there are thousands of men bearing weapons such as this, and other clubs, swords, whatever they might have had handy. And they're assembling throughout England and all through the north of the Isles as well. And then by the end of the month, Edward and Warwick had 48,660 men. Queen Margaret may have had as many as 60,000. We're less sure her exact numbers. So we're teaming up for a serious battle. Mm-hmm. The Yorkshire countryside that this battle took place in was completely frozen, and as the day drew on, it just kept snowing and sleeting. So then you're fighting in 80 pounds of metal armor that's turned to ice around you, and the two armies, whatevs. This is life in 1461, and we're just going to keep fighting. By about 9 o'clock in the morning, they were ready to fight. So there's two huge lines. They're facing each other across this ridge. York's on one side, Lancaster's on the other. And there's basically a blizzard happening. And they say, whatever, the time for England is now, and here we go. So this, of course, makes then the battlefield where people are running through the snow and fighting. It's just slippery. You can't see anything because the snow. It's horrible. Then you've got, amongst snowflakes, a bunch of arrows because England has a lot of archers. So there were also some gunners on both sides, which would be some primitive artillery, and that fired iron and lead shot for a few feet, but the iron and lead was more than an inch in diameter that was being fired. So some pretty heavy bullets. So the Duke of Somerset, who was commanding the Queen's army, gave orders to advance. His men waded downhill towards the enemy, and they crash into the York line, and thus begins this long, fierce battle in a blizzard, which would turn out to be the bloodiest battle ever fought on English soil. The whole landscape was ruined. The town was ruined. Everyone is dying. Horses, men, they are the bodies are falling on top of each other, just steaming. It actually makes me think of the Battle of the Bastards.
Gross.
When you just see, have piles and piles of men. And
are you talking
then
about Jon Snow and
and then they're fighting on top of these
gross.
Bodies. So orders had been given by Edward that lords should be killed and not captured. So just everyone was out to kill as many people as possible. And everyone died, essentially, as they continued to fight. And there's a whole lot that you can go through and read and study about the exact position of all of the armies and how they changed. But the main thing to know is that as they just fought on and on and on throughout the day, they eventually kind of made their way to this river, and there was a bridge called Cockbeck, and now they were pinned on this river and this bridge, and they tried to throw off their armor because you can't swim with 80 pounds of armor on, and either wade through the water or swim through it, but they're already coming from a battle, freezing cold, and what happened is they kept dying. So eventually this river, this beck, was so full of corpses that then the other people in the army are climbing over the bodies over the river. It became known as the Bridge of Bodies. Mm-hmm. So men are dying in the thousands. And finally, the Lancaster line dissolved by mid-afternoon, and the leaders of the Lancaster side took flight. And behind them, as they are fleeing, everyone who's trying to flee with them just, Edward says, show no mercy. So skulls were later found on the battlefield that showed faces split down the bone, heads cut in half. Some men died with more than 20 wounds to their head alone. So there was truly no mercy shown at all. And again, like the father and son scene, jewelry is taken, money is taken, armor is taken. They're just plundering all of the dead bodies. So the field of Towton was known as the Bloody Meadow. On April 7th, Bishop Neville of Exeter wrote to the Bishop of Teramo in Flanders, and he reported the events, and that's where we get a lot of our information from. And he's the one that estimated that 28,000 men had been killed. And he said, alas, we are a race deserving of pity even from the French.
Gross.
Yep. So, started the day with
100,000
men
there.
Then, and then 28,000 dead. So, what is that? Roughly 30%?
Yeah.
A third of people that fought. Were you there?
Yes, it's, sorry, I dropped my sword. What people don't understand is that to not have to face war is a gift in and of itself.
Mm.
As war is not a glorious thing, despite what tales may tell, when when verse transposes and turns these moments into song, it's different than when a poleaxe has shattered a man's forehead. And it is always grim. It is not beautiful, but that is how thrones are won.
Would you like to read a little excerpt from your life with
I
us?
I would love nothing more.
So, we're gonna do Act 5, Scene 6. This is the final stand between King Henry and the York regime, which is Gloucester coming to him in the tower to murder him. Mm. And they fight.
Mm.
So flies the reckless shepherd from the wolf. So first the harmless sheep doth yield his fleece, and next his throat unto the butcher's knife. What scene of death hath Roscius now to ask?
Suspicion always haunts the guilty mind. The thief doth fear each bush and officer.
The bird that hath been limed in a bush, with trembling wings misdoubteth every bush, and I, the hapless male to one sweet bird, have now the fatal object in my eye, where my poor young was limed, was caught and killed.
Why, what a peevish fool was that of Crete, that taught his son the office of a fowl, and yet for all his wings the fool was drowned.
Ay, Daedalus, my poor boy Icarus, thy father Minos that denied our course, the son that seared the wings of my sweet boy, thy brother Edward, and thyself the sea, whose envious gulf did swallow up his life. Kill me with thy weapon, not with words. My breast can better brook thy dagger's point than can my ears this tragic history. But wherefore dost thou come? Is it for my life?
Think'st thou I am an executioner?
Persecutor, I am sure thou art. If murdering innocence be executing, why then thou art an executioner?
Thy son I killed for his presumption.
Hadst thou been killed when first thou didst presume, thou hadst not lived to kill a son of mine. And thus I prophesy that many a thousand which now mistrust no parcel of my fear, and many an old man's sigh, and many a widow's, and many an orphan's water-standing eye, men for their sons, wives for their husbands, and orphans for their parents, timeless death, shall rue the hour that ever thou wast born. Thy mother felt more than a mother's pain, and yet brought forth less than a mother's hope. Teeth hast thou in thy head when thou wast born, to signify thou camest to bite the world. And if the rest be true, which I have heard, thou camest...
I'll hear no more. Die, prophet. In thy speech, for this amongst the rest was I ordained.
Aye. And for much more slaughter after this. O God, forgive my sins and pardon thee.
What? Will the aspiring blood of Lancaster sink in the ground? I thought it would have mounted. See how my sword weeps for the poor king's death. Or may such purple tears be always shed. From those that wish the downfall of our house, if any spark of life be yet remaining, down to hell, and I say I send thee thither. I see that have neither pity, love, nor fear. And since the heavens have shaped my body so, let hell make crooked my mind to answer it. I have no brother, I am like no brother. And this word love, which greybeards call divine, be resident like one another, and not in me, I am myself alone. Clarence, beware thou'st kept me from the light. But I will sort a pitchy day for thee, for I will buzz abroad such prophecies that Edward shall be fearful of his life, and then to purge his fear, I'll be thy death. King Henry and the prince's son are gone. Clarence, thy turn is next, and then the rest, counting myself but bad till I be best. I throw my body in another room, and triumph, Henry, in thy day.
Well, that was great.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for making the journey, Richard.
My pleasure.
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Deuces, peasants!
I was never much of a folder myself. My hands are very shriveled and tiny.